Okay, so quick intro to Will. Maybe give us like 2 minutes about you. So you're an attorney, which is going to like our audience, they're going to, my eyes are going to glaze over, but you're a fun attorney. So,
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
He's also a gamer, you know?
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, we've been talking about that.
We have to be specific when we say gamer. Like, you know, when you say attorney and gamer in the same sentence.
No, I have a PlayStation. And that's spend some free time with that. No, I grew up right here in Southwest Missouri. So I claim hillbilly status. That's one of my marks of claim. And I often tell people when they ask if I'm out of the area and they want to know where I'm from, I'll just ask them. I'll say, have you ever seen the Beverly Hillbillies? And they'll go, yeah. And I say, well, we were neighbors before they moved.
No.
And that's kind of how I introduce myself.
Jethro.
But, grew up in Rogersville, graduated there, went to Drury, got an English literature degree.
And you don't like to write.
And I don't like to write.
Wow.
I like to read. I discovered that I started off in business, you know, business program there. And I did well there, but I took a literature class, as you had to at Drury, at being a liberal arts school. And I discovered that I had a real talent for being able to read something and then just write something about it that a professor would go, that's good, I'll give you an A. And I discovered that the path of least resistance to me getting a bachelor's degree was going to be in English literature. And knowing that I needed to go to law school, that was my ultimate plan.
Sure.
I just needed a bachelor's degree. It didn't matter what it was in. And so I switched my major to English literature and public speaking. And so then went to law school, University of Missouri, graduated in 1996, passed the bar, first try.
Nice
and,
work.
Started doing what brand new lawyers do, find a firm, find a job, work a little bit.
Work like crazy.
Yep. went to, became an assistant prosecutor in Greene County. Mm-hmm. So I did that for 3 years. So that kind of got my feet wet in the criminal law. So when I left there in 2002, I started my own firm in criminal defense, launched MissouriTrafficTickets.com, which was the world's very first completely online legal service provider. Mm-hmm. So we're 18 months older than Facebook. That's what I usually tell people. So
before we lose anybody, I wanted to – we have a very specific reason for having Will on the show.
Oh, yeah, circle
okay,
back.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Because we're like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
They went – what happened to them? So we had a podcast episode on getting legit in construction.
Yeah.
And Will's an expert in business law in, as well as many other things. But – I think that was one of the things we really wanted to kind of connect with you on is it really helping our guys understand more about the legalities of why you need to be setting up your business in you know, a more official capacity. What are the dangers of like just taking cash or, you know, I mean, we can unpack a lot there. But
we're
going to kind of go through some of that today.
Yeah.
And hopefully have some fun doing it.
Yeah, for sure. No, sold all that criminal stuff, started doing a lot more business consulting because I was drawn, you know, that developing your own firm, developing your own stuff. Mm-hmm. Business was where my heart really was. Mm-hmm. So I actually have another website I created for people called MyMissouriLLC.com.
Okay.
So if anybody's looking to create a limited liability company, kind of quick and dirty and easy, but do it right and legit.
Yeah, that's
cool. Rather than going and filing your own paperwork, you can go to that website, fill it out, put in some data, and we'll create a legit limited liability company for you, including now I had to update my website recently because we had to include Corporate Transparency Act compliance with beneficial ownership information filing. So that's part of all that, too.
And that'd just be for Missouri LLC,
yeah, just Missouri.
Right, listeners?
Yeah, yep. I'm only licensed in Missouri. Yep. And just quick side note, as the ethical rules don't allow lawyers to claim to be experts in any area of the law.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So okay. I can't say I'm an expert in this area. So what
but I can't say you are.
I'm not supposed to let you say it either. So that's why I'm
you are not an expert.
Mr. Producer, cut that part.
I don't. I'm just avoiding a call from the bar association.
Yeah, right. Ben misspoke.
I can say my practice is limited too. So my practice is limited to trusts, estate planning, and business consulting.
So being a lawyer is like all of this red tape.
I mean, go figure.
Yeah,
lawyers created a bunch of lawyer red tape even for themselves, which is exactly what
they did.
At
least that's good. I mean, that makes me feel better.
At least you're fighting the system too.
100%. Yeah, always.
Okay, so walk us through corporation versus LLC.
Yeah, so what I usually tell people is a lot of people come and they want to talk about business structure and people think corporation. And I almost always push people towards limited liability companies. Strictly because a limited liability company will do 99.999% of everything that a corporation will do for you without the complexity, hassle, and expense that you have. So corporations, you have to have annual filings. You have to have disclosures that you have to do. You have a lot greater of a record-keeping requirement. Mm-hmm. And usually the pushback I get from folks is like, well, this is going to be a really big deal. You know, there's a perception that LLCs are just for small businesses right. and like that. And what I usually point to people is I say, well, do you watch any Major League Baseball? Specifically, do you watch the St. Louis Cardinals? And so if you listen to the broadcast of a St. Louis Cardinals game, you know, at the end, they always give this disclaimer. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, you know, this production of the St. Louis Cardinals baseball game is copyright by this. And reproduction is expressly prohibited without the express written permission of Major League Baseball and the St. Louis Cardinals LLC.
Wow.
And I always let people know the St. Louis Cardinals is a limited liability company. Mm-hmm. And so if you believe that your project is going to be bigger than the St. Louis Cardinals, then we can talk about a corporation. But if not,
until then,
yeah. Really the only reason that I see of having a corporation is if you anticipate being a situation where you're going to be selling stock, particularly stock on an exchange.
Yeah. Okay.
Because even limited liability companies, you break it down to membership shares, you can have classes of membership and all that. Yeah. So there's a lot of flexibility there. You have a lot more control. You don't have to be filing all the time. And you get all the liability protection that you do from a corporation as long as you're complying with the rules you have to.
Some of our guys are in a spot where they haven't really felt like they're big enough to even go to the trouble of setting up an LLC. Mm. So where are they at? I mean, you're more or less putting this on a Schedule C on your tax return as like a doing business as my company. What are the motivations and at what point should you be forming an LLC?
Well, I never give people tax advice.
Okay.
Because that's not my bailiwick. And I appreciate accountants that stay out of my lane. And so I stay out of theirs. So there are tax advantages. I'm not going to try to explain what those are. There are some tax advantages you can get from that. I tend to focus on just the liability protection that provides. So
what happens? You don't have an LLC. Something goes pear-shaped, goes sideways.
Yeah.
What are the liabilities you're carrying?
You are personally liable for whatever damages are created there. And so that can be a negligence claim. That can be a contractual claim, anything else. And if you're personally liable, that means all of your assets are subject to whatever judgment may eventually come from that. You can lose your home, your retirement, your savings. Mm-hmm. All of those things can come from maybe a simple mistake. From a negligent standpoint, maybe, you got crossways with a contract with somebody and now you're liable, not only necessarily for the contract, the value, but anytime you're in breach of contract, you potentially are on the hook for what's called lost expectancy. So if, for example, if you were in a building contract situation where you were going to build something for X amount of dollars, and for some reason it fell through, you were unable to complete, there's the thought that maybe, well, I'm only on the hook for the money I've taken and I have to refund that. That's not necessarily true. If you were going to say build this for $10,000, but your client had someone who was on the hook ready to buy it from them for $50,000, they've lost $40,000 because of your breach of contract, which means you're on the hook for that whole $40,000.
Yeah.
If you've done that personally, like through a sole proprietorship or a partnership, then you're personally liable for all that. If, however, the contract was between a limited liability company and that client, then only the limited liability company and its assets would be subject to that type of a judgment.
Do you have any stories for us? Do you know anybody?
I'm trying to think. I'd have to dig down and do that. I don't know that I have any
to protect the innocent.
Specific stories about that. You know, it's more from an example. I mean, I can give some examples of some business structures I've created for people. For example, I had a client one time. He was a beef farmer. And so he owned his land. He owned his cattle. He owned a truck that he used for deliveries. And he actually owned a feed store on top of that. And so this was all sole proprietorship. And he came and he said, hey, how do I fix this? And so what we did was we created multiple limited liability companies because our goal was to divide our liability producing activities from our assets. So we created one limited liability company that owned the land. We created another limited liability company that ran the cattle operation. We created another limited liability company that owned the feed store. And we created another limited liability company that was a trucking company.
Okay.
Interesting.
So we've got the cattle operation and the feed store leasing space from the LLC that owned the land. And then we've got the beef operation and the feed store hiring the trucking company to deliver the products. And I told him, I said, now the one thing you have to stop doing is driving the truck. Mm-hmm. So it turned out he was really great at this beef operation and really great at running a feed store. The only problem was he was paying really, really high rent to the landlord, which was the LLC that owned his land.
Okay.
So we're sucking all the profit out of those businesses mm-hmm. over into the land, which really has very little chance of generating any liability. Mm-hmm. So that's where the profit sits. And then we've got them paying. He was really bad at running a trucking company. That sucker never made any money at all. You know, the only thing it made just enough money to pay for the truck, pay for the insurance on the truck, pay for the gas, and pay for the driver to drive mm-hmm. the truck. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea is if that truck's driving down the road and causes an accident, I mean, right. my tragic example is always we run a bus of kindergartners off the road, right? Mm-hmm. And now we've got millions of dollars of liability generated from a negligent accident.
Right.
The that limited liability company is on the hook, mm-hmm. not the feed store, mm-hmm. not the cattle operation. The driver of the truck's in trouble, but that yep. we've hired that out.
Yep.
So yep. that's not us. And then we've provided insurance because we're going to take care of people yeah. to the extent that we can. Mm-hmm. So there's an insurance policy to get taxed. So we separated that liability generating activity, driving that truck up and down the road mm-hmm. from the income generating entities, the feed store, the cattle operation, and the asset holding entity, which was the farm.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that sounds like a complicated scenario, but it's really not. You just have to sit down with somebody and think about what am I doing that can generate liabilities? Where do I want to hold my assets and how do I separate them?
Mm-hmm. One less liability to all of your assets is the idea of separating those out.
Yeah. You want to make sure that if there's a liability generated, it can reach as few of your assets as possible.
Right. That's good.
So how strong is the corporate veil or this protection that, you know, how do you pierce that?
Yeah. It's extremely strong if you hold yourself out and always do business as the entity, the limited liability company. So the mistake we see a lot of people make is, you know, frankly, they won't use an attorney. That's their first mistake. Sometimes they'll make the mistake of having their accountant form their LLC.
Can I stop you there for a second?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So why is that a mistake?
Well, okay. So
I get it, but I'm being the devil's advocate here.
No, and you should, you should. Yeah. So it's really easy.
Why pay you $500?
I get it. Yeah. It's really, really easy, and a lot of people have figured this out, to go on the Secretary of State's mm-hmm. website, fill out a form, pay $50, and it looks like you've got an LLC.
Okay.
Because you're registered, they've given you an entity number, you've mm-hmm. got a certificate that says you have an LLC, and technically you kind of do.
Yeah.
You need to then go to the IRS, get an EIN, employer identification number for that. That's it. But that in and of itself, if you don't conduct yourself properly, doesn't mean you have liability protection. So mm-hmm. a lot of people do that. But then I've seen all kinds of things. They go to the bank and they open a bank account. Mm-hmm. On the bank, they say, it's my account with my social security number, DBA, my LLC. Wrong. That's a personal bank account. Mm-hmm. And so now we're not doing business as the LLC. We're doing business personally under a DBA of the LLC. Mm-hmm. So we've abandoned the structure, which means we're not going to have that liability protection.
Yeah. Now you're personally liable.
And now you're personally liable. So when you sign contracts, you don't sign contracts as Will Worsham. You sign them as Will Worsham, manager of this mm-hmm. LLC, so that I'm always acting on behalf of the entity, not personally. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of times you get to a bank or a contract with somebody that knows what they're doing, and they'll say, great, sign as your LLC. Now, here's your personal guarantee. Mm-hmm. So a lot mm-hmm. of banks will want a personal guarantee because they want you personally on the hook. Mm-hmm. No problem with that. You just mm-hmm. need to know what you're doing there.
Yeah.
They're mm-hmm. getting around your LLC for that particular contract or loan.
Okay, so you're setting this up as an attorney. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're structuring things like making sure all of this stuff's in place. But what else are you providing it that you wouldn't necessarily figure out on your own?
Yeah, well, the most important piece that's missing from almost all of these that are self-done or created by an accountant is the operating agreement.
Yes.
So the operating agreement is a document whereby this is how you and the other members of the LLC agree to do business. Mm-hmm. And for a single member LLC, it's called oftentimes an operating declaration. But it's mm-hmm. it's a written document that says these are the rights and responsibilities of the different people and how we're going to conduct business. You have to have that document to have liability protection. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's the first question in the interrogatories or the deposition that comes from the lawyer trying to sue you and pierce the corporate veil is I need to see a copy of your operating agreement. Yeah. Because if you are doing things outside your operating agreement that you mm-hmm. don't have the authority to do, mm-hmm. then you're operating outside of the mandate of the LLC. Yep. You've destroyed your liability yep. protection. You've pierced the corporate veil.
Is there mm-hmm. any protection to you as a business owner when you hire an attorney to set something like that up for you? If they did something wrong.
Sure. Yeah, that's malpractice. You can sue them.
You
can sue your lawyer. Yeah, right. Yeah, sure. You know, yeah, and right. I mean, most of us carry liability insurance.
Yeah, right.
And that's where that happens.
So you don't want to be taking that liability on as a small business owner to set all that stuff up. You know, you can't take a template to create this operating agreement for your business necessarily because it's very specific to you and what you're doing.
It is, you know, and I mean, when I start with all of my clients with a fairly boilerplate, I would say generic mm-hmm. Agreement, I give it to them, I show it to them, I customize it to some extent based on, you know, whether it's a single member, multi-member, if it's like a husband and wife, it's a couple brothers, although brothers usually doesn't matter because they'll get in a fight just as much as anybody else will. But, I mean, I guess the horror story I could relate recently is I'm familiar.
Like horror stories.
Yeah, I got brought into this. This was a retail outfit. Their accountant created their LLC for them and gave them an operating agreement. I don't know where it came from, but it was not specific to mm-hmm. what they were doing. There was four different partners. They got crossways, and that operating agreement was the death knell for them.
Wow.
Because it was not written by an attorney. It didn't contemplate what happens. As I've consulted with business people over the years, I found that we always plan for our businesses based on what we're going to do when things go well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of my job in everything I do, from estate planning to business consulting, to go, well, what are we going to do when things go wrong?
Right.
Yeah.
And you've got to have a good plan for when things don't go well. Mm-hmm. And so we have clauses that yep. we'll put into operating agreements to say, listen, when you and your partner don't agree, mm-hmm. these are the things we're going to do to resolve the conflict up and to the point of this is how we're going to dissolve this thing. Mm-hmm. And when you have all, it's almost like a prenup.
Yeah.
In advance,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that way, you know what's going to happen when things don't go well. That's probably more important as far as what I've seen coming up mm-hmm. In my practice than, you know, the idea of liability protection. I mean, it's there. It's important. That's one of the reasons we do it. We do have to conduct ourselves properly in order to keep that. But the idea of knowing what we're going to do when things go south between us and our partners is probably really
important. So where's this hesitation really come in play where – people don't necessarily want to talk to a lawyer until they need one. They're getting sued, then they talk to a lawyer. Well, why not have this conversation up front?
I don't know. I mean, if I could preach, that would be what I would preach. Is it's so much cheaper to hire a lawyer to avoid a problem than it is to hire a lawyer to solve a problem.
Yeah. That's good.
And I've said this before. I said, you know, honestly, as an attorney, I love it when people create their own LLCs. You know, I love it when people's accountants say, here's all you need to do. Because what I know is that down the road, there's a big payday for some lawyer mm-hmm. somewhere mm-hmm. because it's probably not been done right. And there's a problem that's going to be fixed. And that's going to be thousands of dollars, not hundreds of dollars, if not tens of thousands of dollars to solve that problem. Mm-hmm.
It's good advice.
Yeah. So now we have the whole like contractual side of it as well, like the downstream. Like if you were going to try to get your business set up to kind of, you know, you have the liability protection from just the way you structure your business. But mm-hmm. then you have all of these agreements or the lack of agreements, mm-hmm. handshakes, text messages, things like that. You mentioned, you know, this, you know, if you don't have a contract in place or you don't have an operating agreement in place, I guess it's similar with the contract side. So do you have advice on the contract side or who should be talking to or, you know, as far as setting that up if you're a small business owner and you don't have an agreement in place, more or less it's just a handshake or an estimate?
Well, for generally speaking, contract law, verbal contracts are enforceable just like written contracts are. It's always a question of proof and evidence. You know, mm-hmm. what can I show to show what the terms of the agreement were? Mm-hmm. Really, the best reason, I think, to have a written contract is to avoid confusion in the future. Mm-hmm. So we can go, well, I thought this, I thought that.
Yeah.
If we've just talked it out.
How sophisticated do you get with this? Like, I mean, a lot of our audience is mm-hmm. small businesses with three-page agreements, two-page agreements. And a lot of times it's just, we're going to do this on this schedule for this amount of dollars.
Yeah, a couple paragraphs.
Certain types of construction and real estate require written contracts to be enforceable. Mm-hmm. So first of all, but it doesn't necessarily require a formal contract. It requires a memorandum. So mm-hmm. that could be as you could have a contract that's as simple as an email where I said, I want this. And you say, I'll do that for this. Mm-hmm. We've got all the terms. We know what we're going to do, when we're going to do it, and what we're going to get paid to do to do it for. That's an enforceable contract if it's in writing. You know, really what you want to do is have everything in there that you can to deal with any of those contingencies and particularly unexpected events that are going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, change orders are a big deal. Mm-hmm. How are we going to handle that change? Writing on change orders, I think, is a big deal. You see that out there. So if you have a written contract that says, this is what I'm going to do, this is how I'm going to do it, this is when I'm going to do it by, and this is what I'm going to get paid for it, that's great. That's the first contract. Then you work off of that and you say, what's going to happen? What are we going to do if this doesn't happen? What are we going to do if this doesn't happen? What are we going to do if this doesn't happen? How do we make changes to this agreement? So a good writing is going to cover all of those things. And the best use of that is for a reference when a dispute happens, not to go to court over. I mean, everything that you want to do with your contract is yes, we want to know how are we going to be able to enforce this, but better than that, how are we going to avoid having to prevent enforce doing it? That. You know, when we write a good contract, we can all look at it and go, well, that's what it says. Okay, I was wrong. We're gonna it's what we're gonna do.
Source of truth. That's good.
And having to go to court to enforce a contract is expensive, and there's you know, nobody going to win. Just because you get a judgment doesn't mean you're going to collect it. And that's, you know, that's in another, that's a whole nother hassle.
So on the, you know, I guess the contract piece is something a lot of people neglect because it seems complicated. It seems really, you know, daunting sometimes. And you see a lot of other examples of 20-page agreements, whatever. So you've hired contractors before. Doing work for various projects or for yourself or for your businesses. How do you feel like they're doing? Like, I mean, what's the boots on the ground look like?
Yeah, I would say I've seen it all over the board.
Okay.
I've seen contracts that are way too thin. You know, there's some simple things that should be in every contract.
Okay, what are those things?
One, you should have a choice of laws clause so that you know that if there is going to be a lawsuit, you know what jurisdiction and what county it's going to be in, or what jurisdiction's laws it's going to be interpreted under.
Okay.
Generally, if you're a small outfit, you're working in Southwest Missouri where we're at, you know you're going to be using Missouri law and you're going to be doing something around here. The other thing that is super important is to always have an attorney's fees and cost of collection clause. And because you can find yourself in a situation where that guy owes you $10,000. But it's going to cost you $10,000 to hire an attorney to go collect it. And so it's just a wash. There's no point in doing that. But if you've got a cost of collections clause in there, then the losing party, or if you have to sue somebody to collect that judgment, they have to pay you not only the judgment, but the cost of collecting it as well. So that's a really important feature. There's another clause that I see in contracts all the time. And when I'm asked to review them by clients, I always encourage them to take them out. And I probably get crossways with a lot of people for saying this. It's just my personal preference. Based on my experience, I hate arbitration clauses.
Okay.
I do not like arbitration clauses. And the reason I don't like arbitration clauses is because you get one bite at the apple. And what an arbitration clause is, it says, if we have a dispute, we're not going to go to court. We're going to submit this to an arbitrator who's going to make a final decision, and that's that.
Wow.
And I don't like it for a lot of reasons. One, the rules of evidence may or may not apply. The rules of evidence exist for a reason. It's to ensure that only credible evidence comes in front of the finder of fact. In this case, it would be an arbitrator. And they may try to enforce those, but they're not bound to do that. But the real problem I have with it is whatever decision they make, you're stuck with. And I don't like that because they can get it wrong. And if they get it wrong, you have virtually no recourse.
So is this from personal experience that you've seen this
pan out? I had a client one time that got absolutely torpedoed by an arbitrator that just got it wrong. Just clearly got it wrong. And there was no recourse in that scenario. But if you have not that clause, if you don't have that clause, and you have the opportunity to go to court, you have the opportunity to settle it before you go to court. You go to court, you have a finder of fact. If you think they got it wrong, then you have a right to an appeal, and you can take it in front of another panel of judges and say, this judge got the law wrong, and they can do all kinds of things. They can overturn it. They can send it back, and then you get to do it again. So you just have a lot more flexibility.
So what's the motivation behind the arbitration? Is it cheaper?
People think it's cheaper. I can see, I can see how it could be cheaper. But frankly, if that's your only bite at the apple, aren't you going to spend just as much on your lawyer to make sure that one shot wins? So I don't really think it's any cheaper because you still have to spend all the money to make your case.
Okay.
So speaking to the money side, and we kind of go back into that because there's probably other clauses you're going to kind of go into as well. But what can I expect from the LLC setup side and the contract side? I know it's probably different by state, by depending on the lawyer, depending on, you know, all of that. But what, as a startup, somebody who, you know, maybe doesn't have it all sorted out, what should I expect to pay?
No, that's a great question. And so for me, I built a website called MyMissouriLLC.com. And anybody can go to that website and they can fill out the form, and it tells them as you're going what my fee is going to be. Mm-hmm. And my fee starts at $495.
Okay.
And then based on the decisions you make and what you want, it can get up to, I think the most it actually ever comes out to is about a little less than 1,000.
Okay.
And that's based on, you know, do I have more than one member? Well, mm-hmm. if I've got more than one member, I think if you've got three members, it adds a total of $50 mm-hmm. to the charge just for the extra data entry.
And members would be other people part of the LLC,
that are part of the LLC, okay. yeah. How many different people you've got. Mm-hmm. And it only goes up to three. If you have more than three, I can do more than three. Just the form's limited to that. If you want me or my firm to serve as your registered agent, we charge $100 a year for that. Mm-hmm. If you want me to do, if you want to have a registration of fictitious name, it's, I think, an extra $75 to file that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If you want us to file your beneficial owner information, we charge $150 for that,
because
that's a pain in the neck to do that. So
everybody's got to do it,
and everybody's got to do it, or you could go to jail for that. I mean, that's a crazy law. It is being challenged. I'm hopeful that it will get
got it. And how overturned. New is it? This is just in the last year. This BOI stuff has come out.
Yeah, it came in. It went into effect January 1.
Okay,
and I guess just to explain what it says is if there's any entity out there, LLC, corporation. Anybody that owns greater than 10% has to there has to be a filing that reflects that. So, Corporate Transparency Act, beneficial owner information filing. If you had any entity that was in existence prior to January 1, you have this calendar year to get that filed. So you got a year. Mm-hmm. If you create a new entity this year, you've got 60 days. And any entity created after this year has to be filed within 30 days.
Yeah, so get the calendars out, boys, because you got till the end of this year to get that done.
Yeah, unless you just created it.
Unless you just started it. Yeah,
and then you've got less time.
What, 60 days?
60 days. Yeah. It might be 90. I'm thinking, I'll go with 60 just in case off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've got to submit a photo ID for all of those beneficial owners. So it really complicated things. And, I mean, depending on what you think, it sure looks to me like a significant amount of government overreach.
Yeah.
But that's the
we'll go along with that.
That's
what we're living in right now.
Hopefully, like I said, hopefully that'll get overturned. But there's civil and criminal penalties just for failure to file. Mm-hmm. And it's not like they took out billboards and Super Bowl ads to let everybody know.
Yeah.
That, and you know, I know you've got, you know, grandma who got an LLC to sell her jellies at the roadside stand in Florida that's going to get tagged by this someday because who's going to tell her?
Right.
And so it's an issue. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah. So then on the contract side.
The contract side, you're usually looking at by the hour review for that.
Yeah.
I have people that come at me a lot and say, will you draft this contract for me? I'm like, you don't want me to do that.
It's going to take too long to draft it.
Let's find a contract. You go find a contract you think you like. Mm-hmm. Bring it to me.
Yeah.
I'll work off of that. Yeah. We'll create something for you that's customized for you.
Yeah.
Make sure it's got all the things tied in. And that's the way we keep those hourly rates down.
Yeah. So do you recommend ChatGPT, Rocket Lawyer, other things you would say as a basis for getting a template? Are there hacks for that? I mean, where do you start? Where do you direct somebody?
There are actually my favorite place to start with a form is U.S. Legal Forms.
Okay.
And so I've got a lawyer side login to that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can start with something like that.
Yeah.
A lot of the contractors that I work for, they've already got a form they got from another contractor or somewhere else. And those are usually really good places to start on something like that. And then I just make sure that we've got all the T's dotted and I's crossed as we go through.
So a quick break from legal, how do lawyers get a bad rap? I mean, where is this kind of negative? Like, I heard this joke one time that this is, and I heard it from a lawyer, so I guess I can repeat it. And the guy would say something along the lines of he said, what's the difference between a lawyer and a fish? And I don't know if you've heard this one before.
Catfish.
A catfish. Okay. The ones that, you know, the bottom feeding, the slime sucking.
One's a scum sucking bottom dweller and the other's a fish.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, where did this come from? I mean.
Well, I mean, to some extent, I don't think this is nearly as true as it used to be, but lawyers just had a level of sophistication in some of the stuff that the general public doesn't have.
Yeah.
And so there's an ability, if you're unscrupulous and you have knowledge other people don't have to take advantage of them. And certainly lawyers have done that, just like financial planners have done, just like stockbrokers have done, just like contractors have done.
Right.
I mean, everybody.
Any business.
Yes.
And so it's the same thing. The lawyer just – and there's just a level of professional jealousy sometimes that comes out. You know, people like to take shots at people they perceive.
So why does it cost so much to hire a lawyer?
Well, we sell our time.
Okay.
You know, first of all, that's the thing that most people need to understand right up front is we're selling our time. And we're not just selling our time. We're usually selling the time for our staff. That time is not just for us. That pays our rent. That pays our licensing fees. That pays our utilities.
It's not take-home pay when you charge $150 or $250.
No, it's really not. And it's supply and demand. You know, that's part of anything else. And that's based on expertise. You know, what level of attorney can you afford to hire? What type of expertise? As I'm approaching 30 years in practice, I can charge and command a higher hourly rate than other attorneys that are just getting at it. But
so, how do you sniff out a good attorney? Like, I mean, where do you get? Where how do you find one? How do you find weed out bad ones from good ones? So from the lawyer perspective,
to some extent, personal referrals are good, but only if it's somebody that's actually used that attorney for what, you know, it's not like, hey, you know, this lawyer's a buddy of mine, if they've never actually done the work.
So maybe that's a good question. Have you actually hired that attorney to do something? What was it?
If you're getting a referral, you know, make sure it's based on actual experience using that attorney. That's a good way to go. A great way to hire an attorney is to meet them personally and just see if you enjoy their company. You know, if they're a person that you connect with, it's somebody you don't like, you probably shouldn't be doing business with them. You'll get a feel for people, I think. So
billing models, are there ways of like, I mean, one thing, and this might not be as applicable for our audience because we probably use attorneys more frequently as a, you know, we have more of software contracts and things like that and looking at more angles, liability, and et cetera. But, is how they bill. Like if we've had experiences with attorneys, well, you'll have three or four different lawyers involved in a project and you get billed for time for them talking to each other. You know, and you get $10,000 in legal expense and you're like, we didn't do a dang thing.
Well, and you're going to see that all the time. And to some extent, and I don't want to make any real blanket statements here, but the bigger a firm that you're dealing with, the more likely you are to get to be getting billed for things that you sort of question, like this lawyer talked to that lawyer, this lawyer sent an email to that lawyer, that paralegal, you know, did this or that, and that all the internal communication, and you feel like you're getting billed for. Obviously, somebody like me, I'm a solo practitioner. You're not going to get that. And I don't like hourly billing. Let me just get that on the table. I know you're reading my book right now. And I don't know if you've got to that part where I talk about
that.
I just don't like hourly billing. I think that it inherently creates a conflict of interest between the attorney and the client right up front. I mean, you as a client want me to spend as much time as I need to get you the best possible result, but charge you as little as I can.
So you can get a flat bill for something. Like this is the quote, this is what it's going to be.
I think in a lot of areas of law, particularly if they are non-adversarial, you should be able to find an attorney that will tell you this is the price that I will give you.
So for people that don't understand non-adversarial, that means when somebody's not taking you to the court or suing you or something like
that. Right, because if I'm in a dispute, there's a lawyer on the other side, we're having a fight. Whenever that lawyer does something, I have to respond. So the amount of time I'm going to spend on the case is not completely within my control. So that's why hourly billing is, we're almost stuck with it to some extent because of that adversarial process in those adversarial areas. In my practice area, because I no longer go to court, I'm able to charge flat fee for almost everything that I do because I can say, hey, I'm going to draft that estate plan for you. These are the components we're going to put in. I know how much time I'm going to have to spend on that. I know what I can sell it to you for and that I can be happy and you can be happy. Same thing with a lot of contract review. I mean, there's a difference between a 3-page contract and a 30-page contract, obviously. About the only thing that I bill by the hour is prearranged appointments, phone calls, or Zoom calls. And it's as simple as if someone wants to book time with me, they can actually go to my website. There's a booking feature. They pick the type of communication they want to have, type of meeting they want to have, the location and the length, and then it tells them that's going to be $75 or that's going to be $600 based on on what they choose. So even in that, I'm really selling a flat fee, even though it's based on time.
Because it's up front. It's not
because it's up front. You know what you're getting,
right.
and And, you know, if you book a 15-minute phone call with me for $75, well, phone calls aren't $75 because I hate talking on the phone.
But way more than $75.
There's you know, some of my pricing models based on would I rather have an in-person meeting, a phone call, or a Zoom call. Okay. And that's just my personal preference. Yeah. But, I mean, odds are you're going to get – if we need 20 minutes, you're going to get 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I've told clients before, people ask me what's your hourly rate. Mine's $495 an hour. But I also tell them, I say, listen, I don't bill for moving paper clips. Mm-hmm. Because that's kind of what you're alluding to.
Mm-hmm.
Is you get this bill that says, you know, I picked up your file, I reviewed it, I put it back, and that's 15 minutes, and that's $125.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I'm not going to do that. Everything that on a bill, if it's an hourly bill for me, you're going to see, you know, I drafted this.
Yeah.
I spoke to this person, which mm-hmm. is probably not in my firm. Personally, you know, the client.
Right.
I filed this document. It's detailed as like this is the actual work that I did that you actually got a direct benefit for.
Yeah.
That's my conviction. That's the way I bill. But
And not all of your time is billable because it doesn't necessarily translate out into a million plus a year in revenue from $500 an hour.
No, and I think that different lawyers approach that differently.
Yeah,
There are lawyers that bill for what they call windshield time. Like it takes me 15 minutes to drive from my office to court. I'm going to bill you 15 minutes for that. Mm-hmm. I sat in court for an hour waiting for your case to be called. I'm going to bill you for that. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a little more legitimate. That was outside your control as an attorney. But you see that type of billing for things. I'm not going to tell you that's right or wrong. Mm-hmm. That's up to the lawyer's personal conviction. Personally, I don't like billing for things like that. I'd mm-hmm. rather build into my fee what I want for the job.
Yep.
But I'm also kind of retired, so I've got some. I don't have quite the pressure that some other attorneys do.
Yeah. So one of the frustrations I feel as a business owner dealing with attorneys is there's a certain level of me doing my own attorney work. Mm-hmm. And I think there's almost a learning curve that you have as a business owner and how to best work with an attorney. And I think that's something that it takes time. It's taken time for me to figure that out.
Yeah.
Because what I mean by that is an attorney is only as good as what you're asking him to do. He's not running your business. He's not telling you what to do. And I think there's a certain level of like, well, why didn't my attorney tell me that?
Right.
Yeah. And even when we write contracts or something like that, I'm having to do a lot of the heavy lifting and involved in getting something correct. Why is that in there? Or we don't do that. Or how does that, you know, so any hacks, any tips you would have for mm-hmm. a business owner that feels the pressure of doing their own legal work of like how best to work with an attorney where you actually get maximum value for the time you spend with them. And protect yourself as well in all of that, where you're not getting to the point of, well, you know, forget it because they're not going to get it right anyway.
No, that's a great question. And I think you're right. There's just a level of sophistication that you get to in education to do that. I think something that helps is if you have an attorney has some of their own businesses, mm-hmm. you know, they're involved in business. Mm-hmm. So they're thinking more entrepreneurially as well. That's why I refer to my practice. I don't say I practice business law. I call myself a business consultant mm-hmm. because I enjoy collaborating with my clients about their business and what they're doing from a business perspective as much as I do making sure they've got their legal ducks in a row when we do that. But you always want to educate yourself on some of those things to know, your lawyer should know what some of the obvious pitfalls and traps are. But if they're not familiar with your business in particular, there's some things that they're just not going to know. Mm-hmm. As you were asking that question, what you know came to mind was the frustration I've always had with accountants.
Yes, it's very similar.
Because I still remember being new in practice and new in business and going to my accountant and saying, hey, if I bought a car in the LLC for my law firm, could I write that off as a business expense? And my accountant's like, oh, yeah, that'd be a great idea. And I'm like,
why didn't you tell me that?
Why am I having to come up with the ideas for my own tax deductions? And then, you know, finally somebody told me, it says, well, accountants are historians. Mm-hmm. You know, their job, what they're trained to do is look at what has already happened and report it.
Yeah.
So what you're looking for is a CFO,
mm-hmm.
a chief financial officer that's looking to the future. Yeah. You know, what can we do to control costs, maximize our tax deductions and things like that. And there are different skill sets and there are different jobs.
Mm-hmm. So what do you need as it relates to an attorney? Maybe you need a business advisor. Maybe you need a business consultant or a coach or something like that more than you need an attorney who can kind of guide you to say, well, now you need an attorney to do that for you.
Yeah, right. I think that's a really good thought. If you can't be looking for your attorney, usually to give you business advice.
Is that malpractice? I mean, can attorneys give business advice?
Yeah, they can. Yeah, no, that's not malpractice.
To an extent?
Yeah, to an extent. Okay. Right. You know, as long as it didn't border on, I gave you bad legal business advice, it wouldn't be considered malpractice.
Yeah.
You don't have
But to. You mentioned earlier in the show, like on the whole accounting piece, like, well, I can't speak to that piece. So I'm like, there's this crossover of like, well, you really, as soon as you start setting up a business, you get into taxes very quickly.
Yeah. And I guess it's that you know, I would take that position for two reasons. One, it's not my bailiwick. There are tax attorneys. I'm mm-hmm. not one. I don't want to be one.
Yep.
And so I just stay out of that mm-hmm. that realm. And then two, I think there are professionals who that's their job.
Yep.
Right.
And you ought to get the best advice from the best person. And that's a qualified CPA tax advisor, mm-hmm. you know, not your lawyer, yeah. unless they're specifically yeah. a tax attorney.
Yeah.
So and then also it's just the matter of I really get irritated when I see LLCs created by accountants.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think they should not do it. Technically, it's a criminal act every time they do it. Mm-hmm. It's a violation of the mm-hmm. practicing law without a license statute. Mm-hmm. But they do it all the time and nobody in Missouri seems inclined to stop them. So I guess it'll continue. But I've seen so much damage created there. And it's just sort of I stay out of their lane. I want them to stay out of mine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's good. OK, Kenzie, you've been on this. You haven't said much because this is not like you're.
Well, I was thinking we're over. Yeah. I'm like, hire the people that know what they're doing. Yeah. Is how I feel.
There you go. Good. Yeah. Yeah, right. Pay
the people. Yeah. And we've talked about that on other episodes too. It's like, hey, don't pay your sister who's not an attorney to write up a contract or, you know, things like that. So I think just circling back to that, like pay people for, you know, the value that they bring mm-hmm. and there's training, there's schooling, there's time, there's experience that goes
into. Don't hire your nephew to build your website.
Yeah, we've talked about that on the podcast too. Yeah, I think that's good. I think just as like probably to wrap up because, mm-hmm. you know, we've kind of gone on.
People to death
on gone on for a long time.
That's what lawyers do.
Yeah, so. No, I think it's like super solid information. And mm-hmm. thank you, Will, for being on the podcast.
I would just
say like what is maybe Ben or Will, you know, final thought on like summarizing what we talked today for an audience who, you know, maybe is just starting out or has been, you know, having a business going for a few years, you know, what's something that they could take away, just a nugget at the end?
I mean, I think the thing that comes to mind for is don't be penny wise and pound foolish.
Good.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's if you're legit getting into business, mm-hmm. $500 to $1,000 to make sure your structure is correct right up front is cheap, easy money that's going to save you potentially tens of thousands, if not more, down the road.
Yeah,
and hopefully, you know, as part of that process, you'll get a little bit of education about not just the documents created, but this is how you need to conduct yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just form that long-term relationship with the attorney that you're comfortable with. You know, I mean, I can only speak for myself and the way I practice, but my business clients, I'm answering emails and questions from them mm-hmm. for free mm-hmm. all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. they're my friends. I want them to be successful. Mm-hmm. I don't need to bill mm-hmm. for every little thing that I do. I'm blessed. My practice is great. We've got a great stream of income from our main source of income, which is our estate planning and asset protection business, which we didn't get into today.
Yeah. Right.
That's a whole other area.
Yeah, we can do that another time.
We do asset protection.
We'll have you back.
That we don't have to, you know, nickel and dime for every little thing that we do.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of our business philosophy.
Yeah.
I've come to believe after 30 years that the best thing you can do to be successful is help other people to be successful. Mm-hmm. And if you're more worried about their success mm-hmm. than you are your own,
that's good.
You're going to win.
Yeah.
You're just going to win.
Yeah. And I'll add to that, that from a business owner's perspective, dig into it. And mm-hmm. and don't be scared of it just because you don't understand it. And mm-hmm. I love that thought of like, don't be, you know, penny wise, pound foolish kind of a thing. Yeah. So like, I think it's really important. Did I get it backwards?
No, penny wise and pound foolish. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I like what you guys said too about just like the proactive side of like finding somebody who can be the proactive support to your business. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it may not be your accountant. Mm-hmm. It may not be your attorney. It may not be, you know, some of the people that you're using as resources for your business, but find it somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's plenty of coaches. Yeah. You know?
If you're the smartest guy in the room, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Right. That's
great point.
Every time.
I have been through 3 law firms and I love our attorneys now.
Good.
And I think sometimes you just need to cut it quick. Like if it's not like to that relationship piece, just being like, if it's not working, move along.
Yeah.
You know, don't try to force fit something. If you're not getting the advice you need, you're not getting the service you need, you know, find a will. You know, find somebody that's actually there that supports you. And we found amazing attorneys. And that similar model where they're like, hey, we took care of that for you. We, mm-hmm. you know, it's not this extraction of our money. Like we feel like they're actually looking out for us.
Yeah.
They've been amazing.
Really
Fulston in Kansas City, because they have this diversity of a team that we need for a business like ours.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's trademark, if it's patent, if it's this, they've got an attorney for it.
Yep.
So that's kind of cool. But you know, I think there's a cool aspect of this type of attorney like Will that, mm-hmm. that our audience needs to find. Somebody that actually knows what they're doing, but also has that knowledge of business. I think
likes
really, really
the business
cool.
side. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, what I offer a lot of my clients is they'll say, "Well, will you do this?" I said, "No, but I'd love to ride shotgun." Mm-hmm. You know, let me help you find the attorney that can do what you're looking for, and I'll be there to make sure that one we pick the right lawyer and that they're doing the right thing. Yeah, and sometimes that's that piece you were talking about is like, you know, find somebody that can help you talk to the lawyer. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's another lawyer that just fills it in
that's
a different role.
Yeah, yeah, I love it.
Love it.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure.
So fun.
Hopefully we didn't bore you guys to death.
Hopefully
there's some nuggets in here.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome.
All right, guys. See you next time.
See ya.
Thanks.